My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, Verona Murphy has ruled that the regional group cannot form a Doyle technical group for the purposes of speaking rights. This ruling should lead to an end of the current conflict and allow the Doyle to proceed this week. But we've yet to hear reaction from the technical group themselves. I'm joined on the line by Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post. Danny, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So, did Verona Murphy blink?
Well, I think she has just, I suppose, gotten to the point where it was inevitable that she had to kind of come down on this ruling. Obviously, initially there had been this attempt to allow this group of independents who were essentially supporting the programme for government also allow them to have opposition speaking time. That obviously we know caused a furore, delayed the election of Micheál Martin as Taoiseach for up to 24 hours. Verona Murphy, the County Court, on that day said she was going to go away and take senior counsel advice to basically get her ducks in a row and come to a decision. We know that Fianna Fáil got its own legal advice from a senior counsel, Michael Cush, and he ultimately concluded that it was permissible for them to support the government and also have speaking time. However, late last night, County Court Verona Murphy came to the conclusion, released a statement essentially saying she can't recognise this technical group in opposition time. Obviously, there's been a very strong reaction positively from the main opposition parties who had railed against this from the outset. What we haven't heard from, as you said in your introduction, we haven't heard from Michael Lowry, who has pushed back on this quite vociferously behind the scenes in recent days. We know he's not happy about this. Ultimately, he will now feel disenfranchised because he doesn't have or won't have sort of the opportunity to put questions to the Taoiseach of the day, as he has done in previous Dáils where he has supported the government through thick and thin, as he said himself. I suppose the difference this time around is that, he actually was in the programme for government negotiations, etc. like that. So there is a kind of a difference this time around. But this is this has been an unholy mess. It's been a very, very messy start to this new Dáil. And whether it ultimately draws a line on the sand remains to be seen. We know that talks are going to continue today ahead of the Dáil returning tomorrow. But ultimately, all eyes are now on the regional group to see what sort of response they come out with on this. Because it's clear, as of yesterday and the day before, they were not happy with the direction of travel of this. And they were certainly not happy that they would lose their opportunity to speak.
Will they feel betrayed by the Count Corla, who, after all, was a member of their group?
Yeah, and that sort of unhappiness was certainly there from the minute that this was sort of heading this way. We know, again, on the day that the Taoiseach was elected, Verona Murphy issued a sort of a temporary ruling not allowing them to speak on that day. And obviously that cooled the waters, generally speaking. But Michael Lowry was clearly not happy with that. So I don't think they're going to be happy behind the scenes, whether it's seen as an act of betrayal or not. I mean, ultimately, once you're elected as County Courtier, you're sort of above party politics. You're the referee in the middle of the Dáil chamber. But I would certainly think, if you've gone to all the trouble to get her elected, and Michael Lowry has sort of been portrayed as the sort of the kingmaker in all of this, the sort of Svengali behind the scenes, orchestrating events behind the scenes between the programme for government talks, and obviously the election of County Cork was seen as part of the deal and a sweetener for that group. So I think he will feel a bit hard done by. But ultimately, this has been seen as a try-on, that ultimately you were trying to have your cake and eat it, trying to play both sides, and they've been found out on that.
Now, I've been listening to the various conversations over the past couple of weeks about all of this, and people quoting the Tony Gregory deal, Mildred Fox, et cetera, all of whom were supporting the government and yet got to ask questions. Do we have any idea? I mean, each side will get its legal advice, and, if you if you look for legal advice in a particular direction, you normally get it. I don't know why that should be. But is there anyone who can actually look at this kind of dispassionately without being on one side or the other and say who's right and who's wrong?
Well, ultimately, I think, you know, it could end up going to the High Court path because, you know, as I said, you know, Fianna Fáil issued their own, or it was leaked out on Friday, their own legal advice from their own independently acquired senior counsel, Michael Cush, who gave his judgment. Obviously, the current court, I would think, has gotten her own legal advice from her own senior counsel, as she said, to give her perspective. But there's probably an element of politics on here. Like, would it have been tenable for her to go into the Dáil chamber tomorrow and ultimately rule that, you know, that independent group was going to have speaking rights in opposition time? There would have been another round of chaos without question. Yeah. So I think,
and of course, she is desperate now to establish her authority, having failed on day one to show that she had authority over the chamber. And she was ballyragged by notably female leaders of the opposition, which, you know, given the historical precedent of her being the first female Ceann Comhairle, wasn't very seemly. So she's anxious, I'm sure, to establish her power and competence in that role.
There's no question about that. And I think we saw an element of that on the second day when the Taoiseach was elected. You know, she began proceedings with a kind of a statement, which, you know, was an attempt to try and cool the waters. And there was a bit of fudge going on in terms of this ambiguity in the standing orders, etc. like that. I think she has an opportunity, Pat, now to try and, you know, there's this reform committee being established. I think they can look at the standing orders again. I mean, the idea to shut this down as a political hot potato is kicking into a process, kicking into a new committee, and ultimately it stops being a live issue or it takes the political heat out of it. So I think that's probably what she'll do. I think she will have to try and address the speaking rights for that independent group, because ultimately they could withdraw their support from government and look to speak from opposition completely, and that would just obviously weaken the government's overall majority. So it's not finished yet. This is not a conclusion as of yet, because we still need to address that there, the speaking rights of that group. And as I said, you know, there doesn't seem to be an appetite from the government to allow it to happen within government time. And, you know, there has been a proposal, I think, for kind of leaders' question to be extended. But again, that would require an overhaul of standing orders. And that's not straightforward either. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not finalised yet. But certainly, I think the main opposition parties, the Sinn Féins, Labours and Social Democrats, have all sort of indicated already that this is the right call from them, from their perspective.
They are positively gloating about this victory in the war of speaking. Meanwhile, I think a lot of people were looking at what was being tried on by Michael Lowry and his cohorts as a bit, as you say, cakeism, trying to have your cake and eat it. But meantime, there are still, 30,000 people without power, and the Dáil takes time off, and, you know, the opposition and the government are playing these ridiculous games over something. Now, there may be an important point of principle, but at a time when the country actually should have had leadership from both government and opposition, you have this squabble. It's ridiculous, really, on the face of it.
It is. And I think the government was under pressure and under fire for the sort of the suspension of the Dáil sitting between the election of the Taoiseach and tomorrow. You know, and from the government's perspective, they said, listen, no, this is normal, and we need to kind of allow ministers to kind of read themselves into their brief and settle in, et cetera, et cetera. But certainly when you're contrasting, you know, having kind of time off, and as you say, there's been hundreds of thousands of people without power for over a week, and it's now still 30,000 people, you know, 10 or 11 days on from Storm Éowyn. It's not a good look. And I think, you know, there was a notable shift in the attitude of the two main government parties when they came back after Christmas. They were in far more conciliatory zone. They were in a far more conciliatory zone before the Christmas break, saying we're happy to play ball, we're happy to be, you know, be generous in terms of our dealings with the independents. But once they came back after Christmas, they said, listen, we've got 86 of the 87 seats, you know, we can play hardball here, and they've certainly looked to turn the screw. And I think they've almost done it in a very short-sighted manner, because they have opened themselves up to the accusations of being arrogant and being high-handed, and, you know, they're now taking flak on on several fronts, and that's not a good look, particularly when, you know, you're only just betting in, and this is historic terms, and you know, I think back to the 2016 government when the Independent Alliance went in with Fine Gael. Those first few months were incredibly rocky and unstable because obviously you had new ministers going in. They didn't know the way. There was a lot of tension between the groupings. I think we're likely to be in store for some of that now over the next few weeks and months as people bed in. So I think the Chief Whip, Mary Butler, is going to have her work cut out for trying to keep this show on the road.
Now let's move on to the Shannon elections, which have concluded. And as I look down the list of the panels, the Culture and Educational Panel, 5 senators, Agricultural Panel, 11 senators, Labour Panel, 11 senators, Industrial and Commercial Panel, 9 senators, Administrative Panel, 7 senators, the National University of Ireland, 3 senators, University of Dublin, which is Trinity College, 3 senators. I'm thinking, how ridiculous is that?
Yeah, I mean, it looks sort of antiquated, but it was set up at a time, Pat, to try and be representative of sectors and people who are people of high standing in Irish society and Irish life to bring a different perspective to the second chamber. There's long been criticisms of the Shannon, its usefulness, its performance. Obviously, when the referendum was put forward by Enda Kenny to abolish it, the people objected and rejected that pretty wholesale. But I think that was essentially a vote for reform, but those reforms
never happened. But basically, it's the boys and girls in politics voting for their pals in politics. That's except yes. for the university seats, which have some sort of quasi-independent status. But then you see that a politician sneaks in there as well, Alice Mary Higgins, on the NUI panel.
Yeah, and that's been long the criticism of this, is that essentially you have a very small electorate, be they county councillors and members of the Oireachtas, voting for their pals, many of whom failed to get elected to the Dáil. So you can look through most of the panels, like in Cultural Educational Panel, Pauline Tully, Sean Kine, former TDs. In the Agricultural Panel, Malcolm Noonan, former minister, Neil Blaney, another former Fianna Fáil TD, and Maria Byrne, again, Robbie Gallagher. Again, the list kind of goes on. Chris Andrews, again, for Sinn Féin, is on the Labour panel. So these are all people who've been rejected by the people in terms of the lower house, but now have a refuge in the upper house for the next 5 years.
Yeah, and well paid for it too.
Yeah.
Free parking. I forget who said it to me, but it was the best gentleman's club in Dublin. Now, that was at a time when it was mostly men in the Shannon, but the best gentleman's club in Dublin, free parking, da-da-da, all the perks. But it seems as if the gender imbalance is in the Dáil is not reflected in the Shannon. There's 20 women of the 49.
20 of the 49. So we know the Shannon holds 60 seats in total, but there are the 11 Taoiseach's nominees to come. Now, we know that because of the split within government, Fianna Fáil will have 6 and Fine Gael will have 5. But of the 49 that have been elected, yes, there are 49. So, Fiona Loughlin has come back into the Shannon. Eileen Flynn has been re-elected. Maria Byrne has been re-elected. Francis Black. There is a swathe of female representatives there, which is sort of in contrast to the pretty poor form or the showing in the lower house. But I think, Pat, your frustration and your commentary around the Shannon is something I would share, and I've long written about this and talked about this. I mean, there's a huge opportunity for the Shannon to play a vital and important role in this country, but there's been no appetite because the political parties want it as their breeding ground for new and aspirant and next generation politicians, or a refuge for those who missed out. Because we have seen time and time again people who've lost their Dáil seats do a term in the Shannon and get re-elected to the Dáil. It keeps them in the national milieu, it keeps them in the rounds and the role of Leinster House. The likes of Timmy Dooley, who's now back in as a junior minister, Dara Bryan, lost a seat in 2007, came back into the Dáil and now ultimately ended up at the senior cabinet. So we have seen that sort of pattern repeat itself over and over again. But the idea is the Shannon,
to say it's for them, it's not for us.
Well, I think that's a very fair. I think that's a very fair statement. It's not the sort of house of higher thinking of people coming from expertise. Like, you don't see the smattering of business leaders who I would like to see. You don't see business leaders, academics who genuinely have barring one or two, who would elevate the debate and bring a different perspective to things rather than just the cut and thrust of party politics. Mm. Far too many senators treat the upper house as a breeding ground. They call themselves, "I am Shannon. I'm Senator X from Dublin Central." No senator has a constituency in Dublin Central, but they treat it as a breeding ground and a training ground for the Dáil, which is not its intended purpose. But ultimately, that's how the political parties and the political system have utilised the Seanad for not just in my lifetime or since I've been reporting on politics, but long since.
Have you done the counting how many Fianna Fáil senators, how many Fine Gael senators? Because now, they are the majority in government, and it looks to me like they have a whopping majority in the Senate, which would give the Taoiseach scope in the 11 nominees between the two parties, 5 and 6, to do something creative and to get the kind of disparate voices into the Senate that it so badly needs.
Yeah, so my total count would have them in the mid-30s. Now, I have to do a final count, but they're well in a majority, and that's even, you know, if you take that, they will have the extra 11 coming in terms of the Taoiseach's nominees. Now, Enda Kenny previously did do a kind of a creative exercise of bringing people who were non-party people in, I think, in 2011, and he lived to regret it because these independent people or independent-minded people caused him no end of grief, particularly when the numbers became tighter and they lost people along the way. I don't see any appetite for that exercise to be repeated. We're already hearing the intention that a number of people who lost out in the Dáil will be given refuge by way of a Taoiseach and Taoiseach's nominee. So it looks like that old habit of just rewarding failure is likely to happen once again.
Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.